I thought we were doing this tomorrow morning, she said. She concentrated intently on her work.
We made better time than I'd hoped.
Jean's looked to Marnes, who was holding his ear protection in both hands, shifting uncomfortably.
Good to see you again, Jules, he said.
She nodded and leaned down to peer through the thick glass window at the gargantuan machines outside, her hands darting over the large control board without needing to look, adjusting large black dials with faded white markings.
Sorry about your partner, she said, glancing down at a bank of readouts.
She turned and studied Marnes, and Jean saw that this woman, beneath the sweat and grime, was beautiful. Her face was hard and lean, her eyes bright. She had a fierce intelligence you could measure from a distance. And she peered at Marnes with utmost sympathy, visible in the furrow of her brows.
Really, she said, I'm terribly sorry. He seemed like a good man.
The best, Marnes sputtered, his voice cracking.
Juliet nodded, as if that was all that needed saying. She turned to Jean's. The vibration you feel in the floor, Mayor? That's a coupling when it's barely 2 millimeters off. If you think it feels bad in here, you should go put your hands on the casing. It'll jiggle your fingers numb immediately. Hold it long enough and your bones will rattle like you're coming apart. She turned and reached between Jean's and Marnes to throw a massive switch, then turned back to the control board. Now, imagine what the generator is going through, shaking itself to pieces like that. Teeth start grinding together in the transmission. Small bits of metal shavings cycle through the oil like sandpaper grit. Next thing you know, there's an explosion of steel and we've got no power but whatever the backup can spit out. Jean's held her breath.
You need us to get someone? Marnes asked.
Juliet laughed. None of this is news or different from any other shift. If the backup unit wasn't being torn down for new gaskets and we could go to half power for a week, I could pull that coupler, adjust the mounts, and have her spinning like a top. She shot a look at John's. But since we have a mandate for full power, no interruptions, that's not happening. So I'm going to keep tightening bolts while they keep trying to shake loose and try to find the right revolutions in here to keep her fairly singing.
Well, I had no idea when I signed that mandate.
And here I thought I dumbed down my report enough to make it clear, Juliet said.
Well, how long before this failure happens?
Jean suddenly realized she wasn't here interviewing this woman. The demands were heading the opposite direction. How long? Juliet laughed and shook her head. She finished a final adjustment and turned to face them with her arms.
It could happen right now.
It could happen 100 years from now. The point is, it's going to happen, and it's entirely preventable. The goal shouldn't be to keep this place humming along for our lifetimes, she looked pointedly at John's, or our current term. If the goal ain't forever, we should pack our bags right now. Jean saw Marnes stiffen at this. She felt her own body react, a chill coursing across her skin. This last line was dangerously close to treason. The metaphor only half saved it.
Well, I could declare a power holiday, Jean suggested. We could stage it in memory of those who clean.
She thought more about this.
It could be an excuse to service more than your machine here. We could...
Good luck getting IT to power down shit, Juliet said. She wiped her chin with the back of her wrist, then wiped this on her coveralls. She looked down at the grease transferred to the denim. Pardon my language, Mayor. Jeans wanted to tell her that it was quite all right, but the woman's attitude, her power, reminded her too much of a former self that she could just barely recall. A younger woman who dispensed with niceties and got what she wanted. She found herself glancing at Marnes.
Why do you single out their department? For the power, I mean.
Juliet laughed and uncrossed her arms. She tossed her hands toward the ceiling.
Why? Because IT has, what, 3 floors out of 144? And yet they use up over a quarter of all the power we produce. I can do the math for you.
Oh, that's quite all right.
And I don't remember a server ever feeding someone or saving someone's life or stitching up a hole in their britches.
Jean smiled. She suddenly saw what Marnes liked about this woman. She also saw what he had once seen in her younger self, before she married his best friend.
But what if we had IT ratchet down for some maintenance on their own for a week? Would that work?
I thought we came down here to recruit her away from all this, Marnes grumbled.
Juliet shot him a look. And I thought I told your secretary not to bother. Not that I've got anything against what you do, but I'm needed down here.
She raised her arm and checked something dangling from her wrist. It was a timepiece, but she was studying it as if it still worked.
Look, I'd love to chat more, she looked up at Jean's, especially if you can guarantee a holiday from the juice, but I've got a few more adjustments to make and I'm already into my overtime. Knox gets pissed if I push into too many extra shifts.
Oh, we'll get out of your hair, Jean said. We haven't had dinner yet, so maybe we can see you after, once you punch out and get cleaned up.
Juliet looked down at herself as if to confirm she even needed cleaning. Yeah, sure, she said. They've got you in the bunkhouse? Marnes nodded. All right, I'll find you later, and don't forget your muffs. She pointed to her ears, looked Marnes in the eye, nodded, then returned to her work, letting them know the conversation, for now, was over.
6.
Marnes and Jean's finished their meals, which consisted of large bowls of soup and hunks of dry, almost stale bread, and exited a mess hall nearly as noisy as the generator room. During the entire meal, Jean's had regretted not bringing those plastic and foam ear protection muffs to dinner. The men and women of Mechanical were as loud and boisterous as they were filthy. She wondered if perhaps they all yelled because they were going deaf in the constant hammering of the place. Outside, they followed Knox's directions to the bunk room, where they found a cot made up for Marnes and one of the attached private rooms reserved for Jean's. They bided their time in the small room, rubbing aches in their legs, talking about how different the down deep was, until there was a knock on their door and Juliet pushed it open and stepped inside.
They got you both in one room? She asked, surprised.
Jean's laughed. Oh, no, they've got a bunk set aside as well. And I would have been happy staying out there with the others.
Forget it, Juliet said. They put up recruits and visiting families in here all the time.
Jean's watched as Juliet placed a length of string in her mouth, then gathered her hair, still wet from a shower, and tied it up in a tail. She had changed into another pair of coveralls, and Jean's guessed the stains in them were permanent, that the fabric was actually laundered and ready for another shift.
So, how soon could we announce this power holiday? Juliet asked.
She finished her knot and crossed her arms, leaning back against the wall beside the door.
I would think you'd want to take advantage of the post-cleaning mood, right?
Well, how soon can you start? Jean's asked.
She realized, suddenly, that part of the reason she wanted this woman as her sheriff was that she felt unattainable. Jean's glanced over at Marnes and wondered how much of his attraction to her, all those many years ago, when she was young and with Donald, had been as simply motivated.
Well, I can start tomorrow, Juliet said. We could have the backup generator online by morning. I could work another shift tonight to make sure the gaskets and seals...
No, Jean said, raising her hand. How soon can you start as sheriff?
She dug through her open bag, sorting folders across the bed, looking for the contract.
I thought we discussed this. I have no interest in being...
Well, they make the best ones, Marnes said. The ones who have no interest in it?
He stood across from Juliet, his thumbs tucked into his coveralls, leaning against one of the small apartment's walls.
I'm sorry, but there's no one down here who can just slip into my boots, Juliet said, shaking her head. I don't think you two understand all that we do.
I don't think you understand what we do up top, Jean said. Or while we need you.
Juliet tossed her head and laughed.
Look, I've got machines down here that you can't possibly...
And what good are they? Jean's asked. What do these machines do?
Well, they keep this whole goddamn place running, Juliet declared. The oxygen you breathe, we recycle that down here. The toxins you exhale, we pump them back into the earth. You want me to write up a list of everything oil makes? Every piece of plastic, every ounce of rubber, all the solvents and cleaners? And I'm not talking about the power it generates, but everything else?
And yet, it was all here before you were born, Jeans pointed out.
Well, it wouldn't have lasted my lifetime, I'll tell you that. Not in the state it was in.
She crossed her arms again and leaned back against the wall.
I don't think you get what mess we'd be in without these machines.
And I don't think you get how pointless these machines are going to become without all these people.
Juliet looked away. It was the first time Jeans had seen her flinch.
Why don't you ever visit your father?
Juliet snapped her head around and looked at the other wall. She wiped loose hair back on her forehead.
Go look at my work log, she said. Tell me when I'd fit it in.
Before Jeans could reply, could say that it was family, that there's always time, Juliet turned to face her.
Do you think I don't care about people? Is that it? Because you'd be wrong. I care about every person in this silo. And the men and women down here, the forgotten 8 floors of mechanical, this is my family. I visit with them every day. I break bread with them several times a day. We work, live, and die alongside one another.
She looked to Marnes.
Isn't that right? You've seen it.
Marnes didn't say anything. Jeans wondered if she was referring specifically to the dying part.
Did you ask him why he never comes to see me?
Because he has all the time in the world. He has nothing up there.
Yes, we met with him. Your father seemed like a very busy man, as determined as you.
Juliet looked away.
And as stubborn.
Jeans left the paperwork on the bed and went to stand by the door, just a pace away from Juliet. She could smell the soap in the younger woman's hair, could see her nostrils flare with her rapid, heavy breathing.
The days pile up and weigh small decisions down, don't they? That decision to not visit. The first few days slide by easy enough. Anger and youth powers them along. But then they pile up like unrecycled trash. Isn't that right?
Juliet waved her hand. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm talking about days becoming weeks, becoming months, becoming years.
She almost said that she'd been through the exact same thing, was still piling them up, but Marnes was in the room, listening.
After a while, you're staying mad just to justify an old mistake. Then it's just a game. 2 people staring away, refusing to look back over their shoulders, afraid to be the first one to take that chance.
It wasn't like that, Juliet said. I don't want your job. I'm sure you've got plenty of others who do.
If it's not you, it's someone I'm not sure I can trust. Not anymore.
Well, then give it to the next girl, she smiled.
It's you or him. And I think he'll be getting more guidance from the 30s than he will from me or from the pact.
Juliet seemed to react to this. Her arms loosened across her chest. She turned and met Jeans' gaze. Marnes was studying all of this from across the room.
That last sheriff, Holston, what happened to him?
Well, he went to cleaning, Jeans said.
He volunteered,
Marnes added, gruffly.
I know, but why? She frowned. I heard it was his wife.
Well, there's all kinds of speculation.
I remember him talking about her. When you two came down to look into Rick's death, I thought at first that he was flirting with me, but all he could talk about was this wife of his.
Well, they were in the lottery while we were down here,
Marnes reminded her.
Yeah, that's right.
She studied the bed for a while. Paperwork was spread across it.
I wouldn't know how to do this job. I only know how to fix things.
Well, it's the same thing, Marnes told her. You were a big help with our case down here. You see how things work, how they fit together. Little clues that other people miss.
You're talking about machines, she said.
Well, people aren't much different, Marnes told her.
I think you already know this, Jeans said. I think you have the right attitude, actually. The right disposition. This is only slightly a political office. Distance is good.
Juliet shook her head and looked back to Marnes.
So you nominated me for this, is that it? I wondered how this came up. Seemed like something right out of the ground.
Or you'd be good at it, Marnes told her. I think you'd be damn good at anything you set your mind to, and this is more important work than you'd think.
And I'd live up top?
Your office is on level 1, near the airlock.
Juliet seemed to mull this over. Jeanne's was excited to have her even asking questions.
Well, the pay is more than you're making now, even with the extra shifts.
You checked?
Jeanne's nodded. I took some liberties before we came down.
Like talking to my father?
Well, that's right. He would love to see you, you know, if you came with us.
Juliet looked down at her boots.
Not sure about that.
Well, there's one other thing,
Marnes said, catching Jean's eye. He glanced at the paperwork on the bed. The crisply folded contract for Peter Billings was on top.
IT,
he reminded her.
Jean's caught his drift. There's one matter to clear up before you accept.
Well, I'm not sure I'm accepting. I'd want to hear more about this power holiday, organize the work shifts down here.
According to tradition, IT signs off on all nominated positions.
Juliet rolled her eyes and blew out her breath.
IT.
Yes, and we checked in with them on the way down as well, just to smooth things over.
I'm sure, Juliet said.
It's about these requisitions, Marnes interjected.
Juliet turned to him.
We know it probably ain't nothing, but it's gonna come up.
Wait, is this about the heat tape?
Heat tape?
Yeah.
Juliet frowned and shook her head.
Oh, those bastards.
Jean's pinched 2 inches of air.
They had a folder on you this thick, said you were skimming supplies meant for them.
No, they didn't. Are you kidding? She pointed toward the door. We can't get any of the supplies we need because of them. When I needed heat tape, we had a leak in a heat exchanger a few months back. We couldn't get any because supply tells us the backing material for the tape is all spoken for. Now, we had that order in a while back, and then I find out from one of our porters that the tape is going to IT, that they've got miles of the stuff for the skins of all their test suits.
Juliet took a deep breath.
So, I had some intercepted.
She looked to Marnes as she admitted this.
Look, I'm keeping the power on so they can do whatever it is they do up there, and I can't get basic supplies. Even when I do, the quality is complete crap, probably because of unrealistic quotas, rushing the manufacturing chain.
If these are items you really need,
Jeanne's interrupted,
then I understand.
She looked to Marnes, who smiled and dipped his chin as if to say he told her this was the right woman for the job. Jeanne's ignored him.
I'm actually glad to hear your side of things, she told Juliet. And I wish I made this trip more often, as sore as my legs are. There are things we take for granted up top, mostly because they aren't well understood. I can see now that our offices need to be in better communication, have more of the constant contact I have with IT.
I've been saying that for just about 20 years, Juliet said.
Down here, we joke that this place was laid out to keep us well out of the way.
And that's how it feels sometimes.
Well, if you come up top, if you take this job, people will hear you. You could be the first link in that chain of command.
Where would IT fall?
Well, there will be resistance, but that's normal with them. I've handled it before. I'll wire my office for some emergency waivers. We'll make them retroactive, get these acquisitions above board.
Jeanne studied the younger woman.
As long as I have your assurance that every one of these diverted supplies was absolutely necessary.
Juliet did not flinch away from the challenge.
They were, she said. Not that it mattered. The stuff we got from them was crap. Couldn't have fallen apart better if it'd been designed to. I'll tell you what. We finally got our shipment from supply and have extra tape. I would love to drop off a peace offering on our way up. Our design is so much better.
Our way up?
Jeanne's asked, making sure she understood what she was saying, what she was agreeing to. Juliet looked them both over. She nodded. Well, you'll have to give me a week to sort out the generator. I'm holding you to that power holiday. And just so you understand, I'll always consider myself mechanical, and I'll be doing this partly because I see what happens when problems are ignored. My big push down here has been preventative maintenance. No more waiting for things to break before we fix them, but to go around and make them hum while they're still working. Too many issues have been ignored, let degrade. And I think if the silo can be thought of as one big engine, we are like the dirty oil pan down here that needs some people's attention. She reached her hand out to Jean's. Get me that power holiday, and I'm your man. Jean smiled and took her hand, admiring the warmth and power in her confident handshake.
Well, I'll get on it first thing in the morning, she said, and thank you. Welcome aboard.
Marnes crossed the room to shake Juliet's hand as well.
Nice to have you on, boss.
Juliet smirked as she took his hand.
Well, now, let's not get ahead of ourselves. I think I'll have a lot to learn before you go calling me that.
7. It felt appropriate that their climb back to the uptop would occur during a power holiday. Jeanne's could feel her own energy complying with the new decree, draining away with each laborious step. The agony of the descent had been a tease, the discomfort of constant movement disguising itself as the fatigue of exercise. But now her frail muscles were really put to work. Each step was something to be conquered. She would lift a boot to the next tread, place a hand on her knee, and push herself another 10 inches up what felt like a million feet of spiral staircase. The landing to her right displayed the number 58. Each landing seemed to be in view forever. Not like the trip down, where she could daydream and skip right past several floors. Now they loomed in sight, gradually beyond the outer railing, and held there, taunting in the dim green glow of the emergency lights, as she struggled up one plodding and wavering step at a time. Marnes walked beside her, his hand on the inner rail, hers on the outer, the walking stick clanging on the lonely treads between them. Occasionally, their arms brushed against one another. It felt as though they'd been away for months, away from their offices, their duties, their cold familiarity. The adventure down to wrangle a new sheriff had played out differently than Jean's had imagined it would. She had dreamed of a return to her youth, and had instead found herself haunted by old ghosts. She had hoped to find a renewed vigor, and instead felt the years of wear in her knees and back. What was to be a grand tour of her silo was instead trudged in relative anonymity, and now she wondered if its operation and upkeep even needed her. The world around her was stratified. She saw that ever more clearly. The uptop concerned itself with a blurring view, taking for granted the squeezed juice enjoyed with breakfast. The people who lived below and worked the gardens or cleaned animal cages orbited their own world of soil, greenery, and fertilizer. To them, the outside view was peripheral, ignored until there was a cleaning. And then there was the down deep, the machine shops and chemistry labs, the pumping oil and grinding gears, the hands-on world of grease-limbed fingers and the musk of toil. To these people, the outside world and the food that trickled down were mere rumors and bodily sustenance. The point of the silo was for the people to keep the machines running, when Jean's had always, her entire life, seen it the other way around. Landing 57 appeared through the fog of darkness. A young girl sat on the steel grate, her feet tucked up against herself, arms wrapped around her knees, a children's book in its protective plastic cover held out into the feeble light spilling from an overhead bulb. Jeanne's watched the girl, who was unmoved save her eyes as they darted over the colorful pages. The girl never looked up to see who was passing the apartment's landing. They left her behind, and she gradually faded in the darkness as Jeanne's and Marnes struggled ever upward, exhausted from their third day of climbing. No vibrations or ringing footsteps above or below them. The silo, quiet and eerily devoid of life, room enough for two old friends, two comrades, to walk side by side on the crumbling steps of chipping paint, their arms swinging and every now and then, and very occasionally, brushing together. They stayed that night at the mid-level deputy station, the officer of the mids insisting they take his hospitality, and John's eager to buttress support for yet another sheriff nominated from outside the profession. After a cold dinner in near darkness and enough idle banter to satisfy their host and his wife, John's retired to the main office, where a convertible couch had been made as comfortable as possible, the linens borrowed from a nicer elsewhere and smelling of two-chit soap. Marnes had been set up on a cot in the holding cell, which still smelled of tub gin and a drunk who had gotten too carried away after the cleaning. It was impossible to notice when the lights went out. They were so dim already. Jeanne's rested on the cot in the darkness, her muscles throbbing and luxuriating in her body's stillness, her feet cramped and feeling like solid bone, her back tender and in need of stretching. Her mind, however, continued to move. It drifted back to the weary conversations that had passed the time on their most recent day of climbing. She and Marne seemed to be spiraling around one another, testing the memory of old attractions, probing the tenderness of ancient scars, looking for some soft spot that remained among brittle and broken bodies, across wrinkled and dried paper skin, and within hearts calloused by law and politics. Donald's name came up often and tentatively, like a child sneaking into the adult bed, forcing wary lovers to make room in the middle. Jeanne's grieved anew for her long-lost husband. She grieved for the first time in her life, for the subsequent decades of solitude. What she had forever seen as her calling, this living apart and serving the greater good, now felt more a curse. Her life had been taken from her, squeezed into pulp. The juice of her efforts and sacrificed years had dripped down through a silo that, just 40 levels below her, hardly knew and barely cared. The saddest part of this journey had been this understanding she'd come to with Holston's ghost. She could admit it now, a great reason for her hike, perhaps even the reason for wanting Juliet as sheriff, was to fall all the way to the down deep, away from the sad sight of two lovers nestled together in the crook of a hill as the wind etched away all their wasted youth. She had set out to escape Holston, and had instead found him. Now she knew, if not the mystery of why all sent out to clean actually did so, why a sad few would dare volunteer for the duty. Better to join a ghost than be haunted by them, Jeanne's now knew. Better no life than an empty one. The door to the deputy's office squeaked on a hinge long worn beyond the repair of grease. Jeanne's tried to sit up, to see in the dark, but her muscles were too sore, her eyes too old. She wanted to call out, to let her hosts know that she was okay, in need of nothing, but she listened instead. Footsteps came to her, nearly invisible in the worn carpet. There were no words, just the creaking of old joints as they approached the bed, the lifting of expensive and fragrant sheets, and an understanding between two living ghosts. Jeanne's breath caught in her chest.